Well, good afternoon, everybody, and thanks for coming to the session. What John and I will be presenting on is a bit of research that ECAR finished up this past spring, and it was my life for about a 7 or 8 month birthing period that looked at how the economic downturn has affected higher education IT. Pay no attention to the people behind the door. this is fun. Okay, well, let's kind of restart. So the study really, the genesis of the study began at ECAR's annual symposium in 2008, where it was really palpable in the room how much had changed or was in the process of changing. And if you think about where we were in December of 2008, the recession was sort of just at very much at our doorsteps. Institutions were in the midst of budget cycles and trying to figure out how to respond to it. And I think at that point we started to think about this was a topic that needed to be in our research agenda as we went forward. And it's something that we launched in November of 2009. We surveyed people in December of 2009. What I'm going to share with you is data from about 300 institutions that participated in the survey. And we also did, alongside of the quantitative survey that we normally do in ECAR studies, we piloted an interactive process that my colleague John Baladakis is going to talk about, which was an online Delphi process, which allowed us to get a panel of IT leaders engaged in a discussion about the future of IT and how IT plays a role in managing institutional costs and how IT was affected by the recession. So the basic questions that the study explored were, how were IT budgets impacted? How did the community respond in terms of where did we look for cost reductions and what kinds of successes would we have? Did the recession create a platform for change? In the popular press, we have heard a lot over the last 2 years about crisis being opportunity, and we wanted to get a sense of whether this particular crisis created opportunity for IT and what that looked like, and whether, as people look to the future, it changed their outlook about information technology in their institutions. I promise not to make the beginning of this depressing. We're near Disneyland. We should all be happy and having a good time. But really the story does begin with how the economy has changed over the last 2+ years now. And pretty much any time I pick up any of the statistics that are given about the Great Recession, as I guess it is now known, it is mind-numbing. And I think I was greeted when I got on the plane yesterday to come out here and looked at the New York Times with some new data points that were saying things like, it's going to take us 9 years to make up for the jobs that were lost during the recession, in the economy, and that doesn't even allow for population growth. It could take 12 years for home values to return to where they once were. And so it's both at the personal level of people that we know and individuals that have been affected by the recession and at the macro level, it is mind-numbing to think about. And certainly higher education did not escape it. And whether you want to look at how endowments have been affected, how if you're in a public university, state support has been affected for higher education, how students' ability to fund their education has been affected, the recession came to higher education's doorstep in a powerful way. And I think, we've all had to become mini macro economists over the last 2 years because it's not too big of a stretch to think about that a debt crisis in Greece, which was happening in as I was writing the futures chapter and talking about how we seem to be emerging into a recovery, and then all of a sudden that happens, or the current foreclosure issues going on with Bank of America, that you can draw a line through those impacts to how it affects the U.S. economy, to how it affects endowment returns, to how it affects funding for education, to how it affects the IT budget. So all of this kind of comes home in very real ways, as I'm sure you all have lived. So when we started to look at how was IT affected, we gave people as their period of time to tell us about how they were affected, the period of sort of fiscal year 07-08 to fiscal year 09-10. And we were asking, how have your budget changed? How has your total IT spending changed over that period of time? And as you can see, we were in a period of constraint. And if you add up the bars, there were fully 7 out of 10 respondents to the survey were in experiencing flat or declining budgets over that period of time. And there were 30 institutions out of the 300 or so that provided us with data that had budget declines that exceeded 15% over that two-year period. And I think there were 20-odd institutions of that 30 that had declines of over 20%. But there were things about this that really surprised us and surprised us at two ends of the spectrum. Honestly, I think when we were all sitting around the conference room table designing this study, we expected that we would have seen many, many more institutions report steeper declines, and we didn't really expect to see that, that a significant percentage would actually say their budgets went up. And as we started to think about why this was that we didn't see as deep a set of cuts or as many institutions undergoing deep cuts within our survey population, a couple different things come to mind that maybe we missed in our early brainstorming about the study. One is that, you know, higher education does still enjoy some sort of counter-cyclical effects when the economy goes into recession. It does typically drive more students to higher education's doorstep. And to the extent that even though loans for homes and cars were drying up, financial aid still seemed to be available and students were still coming to our door. So gains in enrollment may have offset some of the cuts that were coming from other revenue sources. The American Recovery and Reinvestment Act affected higher education. Some of the data that I saw was projecting that anywhere between $50 and $100 billion were pumped into universities through the ARRA funding. Perhaps the way we asked the question affected this, and in that we were asking for what your experience was from fiscal year 07-08, which may have been the last normal budget year for some institutions. For others, they were already into budget cutting, but maybe for some, that was a good year, and it was the next fiscal year that really where the budget cutting started and the year after where it really took off, the year we didn't ask about, the current year that you're all in. So it could have also have been the period of time that we asked about. And I guess the last caveat I'll put around this is that really all we can describe with these statistics is the experience of those 300-odd institutions that responded to our survey. We can't project from this to the entire higher education community. And it's quite possible that institutions that were experiencing deeper budget cuts, the last thing they wanted to do was fill out an ECAR survey describing how deep those budget cuts were. Or as someone had cynically pointed out to me in another session, the person who may have filled out the ECAR studies in the past is the person who's either backfilling someone else's job who had to be laid off or is just picking up other things. And it's just, you know, it's quite possible that there's bias in the sample that we did survey. But nonetheless, we kind of start the discussion from a little bit of a surprise in terms of the fact that while there was pain out there, it wasn't as deep and dramatic as we had expected it to be in terms of how IT budgets changed. Next sort of point of takeaway message for us was that the fate of the IT budget was very much the fate of the institutional budget, or the fate of the was very much the IT budget. IT was neither singled out for deeper cuts at most of these institutions, nor was it sheltered from cuts for the most part. And as you can see, of the institutions that experienced decreases in their central IT operating budget, the overwhelming majority of them also said, at the same time, my institutional budget was decreasing. And for those who experienced increases, the majority there were sitting at institutions that also had enjoyed overall budget increases. And it was interesting to also kind of delve into the almost quarter of the institutions that reported IT budget increases, even though their institutional budget was decreasing, and kind of looking at what might have been going on at those institutions that led them to maybe invest more in IT at a time when they were unable to invest in other areas. But the overall picture was one of IT being treated like many other areas, and maybe that's just reflective of how the majority of institutions approach the budget cutting exercise in general, that what we saw was a lot perhaps of across the board cutting of budgets or across the board application of tactics for reducing budgets like hiring freezes or travel freezes that affected all departments equally. Interestingly, as we delved into those institutions that said their IT budgets went up, and we did ask sort of why they went up, the story that came out was predominantly one of either we were in the midst of a commitment to improving our basic infrastructure, and not following through on that commitment would have put some critical services at risk, or we were in the midst of some large-scale IT projects, and we really couldn't unwind those in any practical way, so we needed to continue to invest. Those were some of the top reasons that, that people gave us for why their budgets went up. So there were a pocket of institutions within this respondent base that had, you know, already charted a course of investment in IT, and they continued down that course even in light of the budget constraints that the rest of the institution was under. So when we started to explore the question of, was the recession a platform for dramatic change in IT and higher education? You know, we had to start that analysis from a beginning point that still said that a significant number of our institutions had flat or even increasing budgets, and the ones that declined didn't decline as much as we had thought. And some of that sort of lack of a burning platform starts to show through in some of these results where, you know, this is everybody in the survey population. So those who had budgets that went up, those who had budgets that stayed flat, those who had budgets that went down. And we asked, you know, as a result of the economic crisis, have you been able to implement IT that has really changed the productivity of staff across the institution, or have you significantly reduced the cost of IT operations or fundamentally changed the way IT was managed? And this is an agree to disagree scale, with the higher the number, the stronger the agreement with the statement. And you can see that respondents are pretty neutral to negative or disagreement to each of these statements, that, you know, there wasn't on average, a pounding of the table saying, you know, we use this crisis to fundamentally change how we approached IT in our institutions. And even amongst the institutions that had budgets that went down, you can see that, you know, only about a third of those institutions agreed or strongly agreed that the crisis has enabled the institution to pursue or implement cost measures beyond what they normally would have been possible to do. And, you know, again, it kind of reinforced the message to us that at least for this particular set of institutions, perhaps the pain never got great enough that they could do things that were dramatically different than a normal course of response to budget cuts. And clearly, you know, as we explored what people saw as their barriers to reducing their IT costs, the crisis wasn't big enough to suspend the culture or the rules of higher education. You know, that some of the things that people felt were holding them back from being able to cut their budgets deeper were things like, you know, it's unacceptable to reduce service levels at my institution, so that's off the table. Or we would encounter resistance to change from outside of central IT, that created a barrier. For some, it was the lack of upfront investment capital, which kind of makes sense in the middle of a budget crisis, that even if they saw an opportunity that could reduce operating costs over the long term, there wasn't a mechanism within the internal economy of the institution to have seed capital to do that. And things like virtualizing servers comes to mind here, where over time there's benefit in reduced operating costs, but it requires the access to upfront capital to get it started. So for some institutions, that held them back. This next slide I used to kind of frame an interesting tension then. So a lot of what I've set up to now has been to establish the point that while, you know, you've all been fighting fires for this particular set of institutions, the platform may have been on fire in some sections, but it wasn't the classic burning platform that said, you know, throw caution to the wind, try everything new. And at the same time, you know, two-thirds of the institutions that responded were also saying, we needed to find ways to trim costs that didn't affect service. And that creates, I think, a tension, because you would think if you're trying to cut your costs without changing the end user's service experience, you really are talking about changing the way the services are delivered. But if you didn't have a burning platform to begin with, that makes that task of experimenting and trying to innovate in different ways in delivering the service that much harder. So as we started to think about the tactical responses and interpretation of the results of what we saw in people's tactical responses to the recession, we sort of had this framing in our minds, that institutions appear to be trying to make changes that didn't affect services for the most part, or the service levels that people were experiencing. And we also recognized that people were, as they were approaching their decisions about what kinds of tactics to pursue to cut their costs, were probably balancing, many dimensions, but at least two of the dimensions that they had to have in their minds was that each cost reduction opportunity most likely presented a trade-off between how quickly you would realize the cost savings and how difficult it was to realize the cost savings. And our hypothesis was that for many institutions, the pressure to produce the cost savings was fairly immediate. You know, you had to cut the budget 5% or 8% this year, and for some of you, it may have been a mid-year budget cut, so it was cut it in the next 6 months. Not set me on a course to fundamentally lower the cost curve for IT permanently at the institution, and we'll give you a couple of years to get there. And we also realize that there are political decisions that every leader needs to make, and if you're under pressure to try to reduce costs quickly, you may gravitate towards things that are relatively within the control of the IT leader to affect and would encounter less resistance to change, perhaps. So our hypothesis had been that we would see a lot of things in that sort of quick win area of the matrix, changes that produce cost savings relatively quickly and were relatively within the control of the IT leader to accomplish or were deemed to be politically less risky, and that we wouldn't see as much at the other end of the spectrum where people were saying, you know, I'm making a down payment on future savings because I'm in an institutional climate where trying to change the cost curve for IT permanently is a luxury that I can afford to pursue. And just before I get into the slide itself, kind of giving you a little bit of background on our survey instrument, we included, I think it was about 47 different tactics that we thought institutions could adopt to cut their IT costs. And they were in five different categories, including things like changes to how financial management, like use of chargebacks or spending down of budgetary reserves. There were changes in personnel management, so things like hiring freezes. They were changes in how technology was managed, so virtualizing servers. They were changes in how the project portfolio was managed, so things like reducing the scope of projects or deferring projects. Or they were different changes to IT service management. And so it could be things like outsourcing a portion of the support infrastructure. So we had these, you know, different treatments. And what I'm showing you here are the ones that the largest number of respondents said that they had either done, were in the process of doing, or were planning to do as part of their response to the cost-cutting imperatives at their institution. And we were pleasantly surprised to find a mix of tactics being adopted that were both examples of some of the short-term things that people need to do to freeze budgets quickly or change budgets quickly, as well as some of the longer term things. So I've highlighted in yellow some of the things that, you know, in my mind are some of the quick responses. You know, we're going to reduce the travel budget. We're going to retire and frequently use technology. We'll extend our 4-year PC replacement cycle to 5 years. We'll defer capital expenditures. They're things that have material impacts quickly, but one could argue they're not sustainable because you can only, you know, as I think I don't remember who said it, but someone when writing about cost reduction said you can only stop washing the windows once. You know, you can't keep going back to that well too many times. And so we had a mix of things where, you know, they're the stopping of the washing of the windows, but we also had things like increasing virtual servers, consolidating duplicate platforms, changing the project mix to place greater priority on projects with high ROI. You know, that one could see as longer-term propositions to maybe both yield some immediate cost savings but also position the organization for cost savings into the future. And so, you know, despite all the different pressures that people were under, you know, this was, I think, a pleasant surprise for us in the data. Also kind of looking at these tactics and showing you what people said they're not going to do, a mix of good news and bad news in this, too. From an optimist point of view, it's nice to see that the overwhelming majority of institutions didn't have any plans to cancel their active projects or increase chargeback pricing, which really is just shifting the problem from your budget to somebody else's budget, you could argue. But also perhaps we shouldn't take much comfort in the fact that, you know, 4 in 10 institutions felt like they had to relax their disaster recovery objectives or had to reduce service levels in order to cope with the crisis. So there were some takeaways in what people said they weren't going to do as well. Actually, let me kind of back up for a minute and just also acknowledge that there's no secret recipe here in the combination of tactics that institutions could use to achieve cost savings. You know, as we looked at the combinations of things that people said they did and their assessment of how strongly or how dramatically they reduced their IT costs. There wasn't a secret recipe here of just do these three things and your costs go down. We did find a relationship between the number of things people did and their confidence that they had reduced their costs, so that institutions that reported that they had done more things out of those 47 tactics were also more likely to agree that they had reduced their IT costs. This is one of these areas where we can't use our statistics to prove any causality. We can hypothesize that perhaps that greater result is the cumulative effect of a lot of incremental changes. So the fact that I did more things helped me incrementally improve in more areas and feel better about my cost reduction. You could also argue that there's a placebo effect, that I did a lot of things, so I feel better that I must have reduced my costs. Don't want to accuse anybody of being Pollyannish here, but there's that. Or it may simply be an indicator that there is no silver bullet here, that, these are complex, you're in complex organizations, and it does take a range of different tactics to be able to reduce your costs. And I think that, more than half of the institutions said they had done 16 or more out of the 47 things we were inquiring about. So where does that leave us as we started to then ask people about how they're feeling about their present funding levels, what they think was going to happen in the future? And I will say that the slight majority of institutions expected their budgets to be reduced in this current fiscal year, and another fifth of institutions expected their budgets to be flat going into this fiscal year. And unfortunately, past is prologue. Those who had experienced cuts in the past were more likely to expect cuts in the future. Those who had been seeing their budgets increase, albeit modestly in the past, actually were in greater percentages expecting increases in the future. But I think what this says, and the chart shows, level of agreement of institutions that had budget decreases, neutral budgets, and budget increases, with a couple different statements about the adequacy of their funding. And the first two columns really are the keep the lights on column. I can maintain my operations reliably, and I can keep pace with vendor mandated upgrades. And you can see here that for the most part, the means are above neutral. They are all above neutral. Some, those who had budget increases feeling more strongly about it than those who had budget decreases. But when you move into the next two columns, these are the innovative columns. These are the ability to implement my strategy and react to new user needs and interests. And I think perhaps the legacy of the budget cuts that these institutions had gone through was it further crowded out their ability to innovate. And we entered this probably with, I would imagine, pretty constrained budgets. When ECAR has looked at the IT funding topic in the past, as I recall in 2004, I think the metric was that on average, those respondents reported that their budgets were more than 75% committed to fixed costs. They were inflexible. And that what this has done is kind of come on top of that and probably cut even more of that discretionary capacity out of budgets, whether it's dollars or people time that you can put into new needs. And so I think the biggest threat that has come out of this is not, at least up to this point, to our ability to keep systems running, but it really is to our ability to innovate and to be able to support innovative directions of the institutions. And perhaps that is also a clue for why there was clues within the responses that we're seeing a sort of a greater opening up and willingness to experiment with new things. And what this chart is showing, that we asked people that compared to last year, how have the budget cuts affected the likelihood that your institution would do a number of different things related to alternative ways of delivering IT services, whether it's the cloud or forms of outsourcing or open source. I think what we're seeing here is probably greater willingness to consider these as alternatives than have shown up in other ECAR studies of these particular topics. Now, the populations are different, so we can't do direct comparisons. But I think what maybe we have seen is a loosening up of people's willingness and ability to consider these topics. And just one quick anecdote, one of the people we interviewed shared with us that they needed to pick a new library system in the middle of the financial crisis. The money wasn't there to do what they had thought they were going to do, which was adopt a commercially vended software package. They ended up going open source, which was the first time that institution had ever done that. And then that sort of opened their eyes to other areas where they would use open source software solutions. And I suspect that that story played out on numerous campuses of, you know, we're in a tight situation, we'll be willing to take a little bit more risk. And, you know, there are expectations for that change will continue. And that, and I think this is both sort of a message of expectations that change will continue and optimism that IT isn't being made irrelevant by the budget cutting that everyone has gone through. And we had fairly high agreement amongst the respondents, and this didn't really differ whether their budgets had gone up or their budgets had gone down, that in the next 2 years they were confident that technology would be continued to be viewed as a strategic part of their institution's response to cost management challenges. And they rejected the notion that it would diminish in importance. I think what we did see here, interestingly, is that there was even stronger agreement with these statements among institutions that entered into the recession, with IT being viewed as a more strategic enabler at their institution than maybe perhaps more of a cost center. And we also saw patterns where institutions that felt they had changed the most in the past 2 years in response to the recession were more expecting more change to come, which, you know, began to suggest to us that perhaps this is as much or maybe a lot about leadership as much as it is about responding to a set of exigent financial circumstances, which really leads us into what the leaders told us in the Delphi panel.
Thanks, Bob. So in addition to the traditional survey methodology that we used on the main part of the study, we also decided this time to convene a panel of executives from around higher education who had been at institutions where they indicated that they had faced some financial hardship and had felt that they had done something to deal with it. So we talked at this conference last year. We started having some conversations with some people, looking for people who had done some interesting things. We talked to other people we knew. Some people opted into it and said, yeah, we fit those criteria. Others told us, no, we really don't either. We're one of those institutions that, you know, hadn't been hit very hard by the budget crisis, or, you know, that, well, we have been hit hard, but we haven't really done anything we would consider worth sharing with anybody, so they didn't participate. So of the group that we invited, or that we talked to, we picked 38 who seemed like they met those criteria that we invited to participate. Of those, 29 accepted and logged into the tool that we used. The tool was an online, what was called real-time Delphi. If you're familiar with the Delphi process, the idea is that, you know, you go through, in a traditional Delphi, multiple rounds where you pose some questions or statements to people, and they'll put their answers in, and everybody can see what they answered and kind of respond to the next piece. The way the real-time Delphi worked was that people could see their answers as they were put in, and then if they felt that that changed their opinion, they could go back and change their opinion. We left this open for a few weeks so people could go in there and do that and see what each other were doing. So the results we're showing is what came out of that. So of the group, we had, of the 29, we had 22 who were senior IT leaders, basically CIOs or VPs for IT. We had 7 people who were non-IT leaders. 6 of those were CFOs or EVPs, and one of them was a provost. So that's the group that we had. We represented 16 public and 13 private institutions. That was a pretty even split. We also wanted to see if institutional size would have anything to do with the answers. So we kind of took a look, and the even split kind of came out at the 5,000 student level. We had 17 that were over, 12 that were under. We tried a few different levels to see where we could just get kind of an even-ish split in the answers. We asked participants to indicate their level of agreement with 6 statements, but more importantly, provide us explanations and support for why they chose what they chose. So the tool allowed them to do that. We had 2 additional questions that were aimed to collect leading practices. So we asked people, you know, if your CFO gave you money to invest with the promise that it would generate a quick return, what would you do and why? You know, so we asked those types of questions as well. And as I said, people could see the answers others were giving and change their answers as they went. So this is probably a little hard to read from the back of the room, but what I wanted to demonstrate here is that we had pretty good consensus among our panelists. If you can see where the stripe is here, normally when we do a study and we'll look at the responses, the means will end up somewhere in the 2 to 4 range, but there's kind of a bell curve around the responses. When you look at these, you know, for example, the second question here, 19 of 22 came out, ended up with the same answer. So either the panelists we pick all shared similar experiences, or this process to some extent did pull people, you know, together. And so what we did find here was that in general, you know, the respondents were a bit more positive overall to the questions that we posed than the respondents to the general survey, with the exception of the first question on here, which said that we asked whether over the next 3 years central IT organizations would face greater cost pressures. And on that question, the respondents to the Delphi were more negative than the overall respondents. You know, we found that even on some of the so on these first few questions, we had pretty good consensus. So on the fact that we asked people, can you further reduce the overall cost of providing technology without significantly impacting critical services? And surprisingly, 19 of the 22 agreed with that statement. We'll talk about that a little bit more later. But what they, you know, what they basically came back with was, sure, we can we can maintain critical services. The question is, how do we define critical services? To the point that that Phil made earlier, that it may be a little bit hard to get people to agree to service level reductions. So if you can get people to agree that something isn't critical, you may be able to cut it. We asked whether institutions can use information technology to make significant additional improvements to their overall financial performance. So can you generate increased revenues? Can you cut costs outside of central IT? And here again, we had pretty strong agreement with this statement, or 16 of 20 either agreed or strongly agreed with that question. On the next groupings here, we had kind of a split between agree and neutral responses, but what we found was, as we started to slice that by public or private, large or small, that we did see some groupings. Phil, can you actually pass me my notes over there so I don't screw this up? But as we, as we looked at that, we found that, for example, private institutions public institutions believed more strongly that IT would need to make additional cuts going forward, and they thought that the way IT services would be delivered would change. However, they also were more inclined to believe that central IT would gain influence as a result of the downturn than private institutions. Public institutions were somewhat more positive that there was room to cut additional spending without impacting critical services, but less positive that they could impact their overall financial picture. So as we kind of went through this, some trends did emerge. Now, the number of respondents to this was small enough that we couldn't do real statistical analysis against this, so that's kind of taken with a grain of salt, but at least, you know, we did find some trends in the respondents. And then finally, with the last question, which was, as a result of responses to the economic downturn, the influence of central IT within institutions will be strengthened. This was the one that had the biggest split, although, you know, 15 of the 23 people who answered it positive. We still ended up having more of a distribution on that one. But again, you know, this is one where, so this is the only one where the difference between small and large institutions stood out more, where large institutions were much more in agreement that the influence of central IT would increase than those at smaller organizations. We got four major themes out of this. What we did was, for each of those questions, the panelists, as I said before, went in and gave us written commentary ranging from, you know, a sentence or so to a couple of paragraphs, explaining why they answered the question the way that they did. And so I went through and I synthesized all of those answers and really came up with four major themes that came out that jumped across multiple questions. And if you read the paper that's about to be published on this topic, there were some themes that emerged on each of the questions as well. Specifically, I'm not going to cover those here, but the four that really jumped out, the first was around business alignment. So people said repeatedly, IT organizations can't succeed alone in these tasks. They need to demonstrate leadership, partner with other units, and show results. And one of the non-IT leaders from a large public institution came out and said, you know, IT is one of the largest cost centers on our campus today, and it will continue to be so. Expectations around improved outcomes will increase. You know, we heard that from a number of the folks, that really there's going to be more of a focus on achieving results. And so aligning with the business was important to find out what should those results be and really to make that work. The second thing that we heard was around prioritization, and that to keep critical services running at acceptable levels, which most people agreed that we should be able to do, we needed to define what non-critical services were, and we may need to scale them back. And in order to accomplish that, many of the respondents highlighted that effective governance was really going to be needed, more so than a lot of the participants had today to make that happen. So again, a non-IT leader from a large private institution this time said, there are definitely opportunities for further reduction in technology costs in non-critical services, as long as there is an institutional appetite for identifying what is non-critical and living with the resulting reduced services. The third one that came out was around economies of scale, and this was attributed to a number of different things. So finding efficiencies both within and across institutions was highlighted. Using centralization, shared services, cloud computing, and outsourcing were some of the tactics that people brought forward. So a CIO from a large private institution said, there are huge opportunities to reduce costs if we are bold. Opportunities that revolve around standardization, consolidation, centralization, and outsourcing. The goal is to build large economies of scale or to go to a source that has larger economies of scale that you cannot create yourself. So whether that was collaboration across institutions, which several people cited that they were doing, either within a system or within groupings of geographically connected institutions, or whether that meant going to a vendor to outsource something or through cloud computing, being able to leverage those economies of scale. And then finally, and aligning with one of the top barriers in the main study, was around willingness to change. Although in this group, we got a slightly different result. Many of the folks who participated in this, possibly because we chose people who had indicated they really were at institutions where they were in some form of crisis and had to do something, they did say the cultural barriers to change were reduced, although they pointed out that was probably temporary. So an IT leader at a large public institution said, college deans and administrative officers seem more willing to talk about their plan initiatives and ask how IT can help. The relationship between central IT and decentralized college technical staff is strengthened because we need to collectively become more efficient and seek collaborative ways to find technology cost savings. You wouldn't have heard that at most research institutions 3, 4, 5 years ago. I mean, that's definitely a shift in the way people were working together. And we got a lot of comments like that, where people really were seeing a definite willingness among the constituents on campus to make some of these cuts. But overall, the panel did not indicate, similar to the results of the main study, that the downturn had been a game changer. When we first went into this and started planning it, all of the press was so negative and doom and gloom, and this is going to change everything. And, we kind of thought we might see some of that coming out of this. But in general, the suggested responses people gave us weren't new. A lot of what people were telling us around economies of scale, governance, et cetera, things we've all been talking about, writing about for 10 years plus. A lot of the technical responses people gave in response to the question about if you had one thing to invest in, what would they be? The top one was around server and desktop virtualization, voice over IP, things along those lines. Those aren't new. What people did feel, however, was that the pressures of the downturn were accelerating the adoption of some responses that higher education might have been slower to move to. And again, kind of back to that maybe temporary willingness to change and try new things to try and meet some of these budget mandates, and also causing institutions to reconsider the way they organize and deliver IT services. There was a bit of a debate about shared services where, a CFO from one campus had come out and said, I would love for that to work, but I've never seen it work. And then a couple of people responded and said, well, actually, we're doing it. And here's a couple of examples of where we've made that happen. So that was kind of interesting in the dialogue. We found that, overall in our respondents to the Delphi process, IT leaders, and especially more so in large and public institutions, seemed to believe there was potential for institutions that do the right things to emerge from the downturn stronger, and that the downturn may cause the way we deliver IT services to change. The non-IT leaders in the survey, remember there were only 7 of them, so again, it may not be statistically significant, but seemed to feel more so that this was a bump in the road and things are going to go back to the way that they were once the crisis is over. So it's kind of what we found in the Delphi. I'll let Phil summarize the overall findings.
So I guess I'll do this quickly and we see if we can take a couple of questions. So as we think about sort of what we learned from the survey research and what we learned from the Delphi process, I think what we saw is institutions taking a set of measured responses calibrated carefully to the crisis that they had. And I think if you are of the mindset that the crisis is largely behind us, then we can pat ourselves on the back and say we met the challenge, we did what we needed to do, and we can continue to take advantage of innovation where it presents itself. If you think we're into sort of a new normal that is going to be characterized by maybe anemic growth and ongoing consternation about budget situations and conservatism at our campuses, which from everything that I've read in trying to write this study felt like the predominant sort of crystal ball of what the next few years is like, then, you know, sort of some takeaway pieces of advice, and this is where ECAR fellows get to editorialize their own opinion and can't prove any of this with survey research, but hey, I have the podium. You know, I think what's going to be important for IT organizations is to really embrace the idea of financial transparency. I think as budgets stay tight, I think the amount of confidence that the institution has that it understands what drives IT costs, how IT dollars are being spent, and what results it's getting may make the difference between whether you're successful in your budget appeals or whether the next person in the room is successful. I think it's time to, and we saw evidence in the survey that people are already doing this, is sort of reshaping the institutional IT agenda and at least raising questions with IT governance groups about relative priorities of different investments and seeing and being prepared for more of the energy to be aligned with projects and investments that affect retention, that affect cost of the institution, that help capture new revenue streams if your institution has strategies in online learning or continuing ed or things like that. I think this is not a good climate in which to surprise the CFO. So long-term financial planning is an opportunity, I think, for CIO and CFO to sit down together and say, if we don't have a five-year IT capital plan, we probably should have one. Because neither you nor I can afford to be the ones going into the cabinet saying, you know, the data center's out of capacity and we have no plan. This is just, you know, there's no rainy day fund anymore at a lot of institutions to cope with that, with those kinds of surprises. And as our Delphi panel, alluded to, I think we need to continue to pursue the opportunities to think differently, especially about the commodity IT services, because we don't have a lot of sources of discretionary resources in our IT organizations to fund in new innovations in the next set of things. So I think it's going to have to start with IT organizations and thinking about how can we create some of that capacity by trying to do some things differently. And if you do number four, that kind of leads you to number five, which is how do you think differently about the skills in your own workforce, that the more you embrace alternative sourcing as ways of changing the cost model for IT as they prove themselves, that changes the kinds of people you need in your organization. So I know we almost exhausted our time, but maybe we can squeeze in a question or two if anyone has. Yes. We tried, but our survey population or our respondent population wasn't large enough for us to cut that finely enough to pick up the regional differences, and I suspect there were some that would have revealed themselves, because we just know that the broader economy has presented itself differently. No, as I said, this just describes this set of institutions, and while they were spread across the country, we don't know if perhaps we just didn't have enough coming out of any particular region to pick up those who were hit harder than what this data represents. Any others? Not. Thank you very much. Enjoy the conference. Thank you.